guy, Brian Hutchison, back for episode 8 of Behind the Science of Career Development. If you've been following us, particularly this year, you know that we aim to scour the globe and try to find unique and new voices about the emerging field of career development as we prepare for the post-pandemic world and also this rapidly changing 21st century world of work. I'm super excited to have a guest today who I've had the pleasure of getting to know really well for the last couple of years. I'd like to welcome Heather Lou Lasky to the episode and ask Heather, why don't you give us a little introduction of sort of your background before you came into career development and then your role that you've played in career development in the past several years?
Hi, Brian. It's so good to be here. And everyone, or to my new friends here, my name is Heather Lou Lasky. I am here in New York City. Where do I even start introducing myself? Maybe a couple of taglines. I'm a former finance professional. I am currently an entrepreneur and a career coach, a student, a mother, wife, daughter, friend, big sister, and a lifelong learner.
I love it. So can I help you tease some of those apart for our audience?
Sure.
So you're in New York City and you work in finance. So safe to say that you started your career working on Wall Street. Could you talk a little bit about your sort of educational journey that took you into finance and then your early roles in that industry?
Sure. And that's a bit of a longer story than maybe what you're expecting.
It's a podcast. We have plenty of time.
But I also don't want listeners to be bored. So let me try to do this story as quickly as possible. I was born and raised in China, specifically Beijing, China. And I came to the States right out of college for graduate school. And when I went to graduate school, I had no idea in terms of what my career would be like, but I told my dad and I said, you watch, I'm going to graduate school. I'm going to Georgetown and I'll be working on Wall Street after. Mm. And my dad was very kind and supportive. He said, okay, that sounds really great, but tell me, what does Wall Street do? What do they do other than a location, right? Specifically, we know it deals with money. What do you think he'd be doing? And I had no answer for him, but I said, look, I will get there and I will tell you once I get in the door. So that's how I came to the US. And I only had one goal, was I'm going to work on Wall Street. And it turned out that was a little harder than I imagined. Being someone who was not born and raised here, who didn't go to undergrad here and have no relevant work experience, was very challenging. Couldn't find a job. When I graduated from Georgetown, I had decent grade, but no job. So it took me a little while to say, okay, how do I get there? I had this goal. I had to relearn everything, how to write a resume, how to talk to people, how to shake hands, and how to do this mysterious thing called networking. So that was humbling, but it was also where I feel like I experienced the biggest personal growth. 6 months after I graduated, I got a job with Deloitte, Enterprise Risk Management Consulting Unit. Really enjoyed working there, but still I knew that's not where my dream was. I wanted to go to Wall Street. So 2 years after Deloitte, I found an opportunity at Goldman Sachs in the finance unit, went there and started working on Wall Street ever since.
And so you're in this career, you're having success. I mean, I've seen the evidence and we've had enough conversations to know that you were being successful in that. But if I remember correctly, like you sort of had a crisis of purpose in your life that caused you to consider some, not just pivots in your career, but drastic career change. Could you tell us a little bit about how that unfolded? I want to hear about culinary school.
I almost forgot about that part. Yeah, I think for a lot of people who's worked on Wall Street, they'll tell you that's a job that'll suck the life out of you. And a lot of people will say it's a soulless job. To some extent, I agree. It becomes very much about how much money did we make? Why did we make the money? How could we make more money? How could we automate a process and let go more people, right? Shift those jobs offshore and turn people into machines and help us increase productivity. So I think for a lot of us, especially post the financial crisis, it was becoming clear that there's something bigger beyond the immediate dollar signs in front of you. Now, as I mentioned earlier, with my own background, I always had a soft spot for international students like myself, who's struggling here, who's clueless and try to establish their careers here. So I've been coaching sort of as a hobby, but I started to become more serious about maybe do something as a career coach.
Yeah. And I think we see this a lot, right? I mean, the whole world has taken a bit of a pause here with the pandemic for the last 16 months. But as listeners know, one of my favorite quotes is from Dr. Mark Savickas, that we try to actively master what we once passively suffered. So I love hearing that your experience as an international student seeking work here, and I think internship here in the United States, really is that sort of knob that turned, and that became the direction that you wanted to go in. So for the listeners, so really got us connected, and what really made me start to think about career development and my own limitations was how you built the organization, your business of Champ America, and how that was really focused on the unique things for students from other countries outside the U.S. that were trying to find both internships and work in the United States. I guess as a question, when you talk to people, like, what are the unique needs of students and workers from other cultures? What are the things that someone like me might need to look at differently as their uniquenesses?
As their own uniqueness or the job search process here?
Not the individuals, but like the internship and the job search process. What are the things that someone who is born and raised here in the United States but has an interest in working with people from other cultures, what are the unique attributes of those students versus students that grew up in the United States and sort of are familiar with this educational system and the system of work here?
Right. Yeah. So I think speaking from my own experience, when you just come here, you never imagine the way of life, right? How you shake hands with people, how you talk to people, how you approach a job interview could be so different from what you're used to. So you feel like you're airlifted and just drag and drop into a new environment, right? And that could be create some cultural shock, and not always in a good way. Some people like it, enjoy it. And I would say vast majority of people say, oh no, this is scary. I don't know if this is what I sign up for. So I think for a lot of them, that initial fear really prevent them from exploring things outside their comfort zone, from reaching out to people and really consider what is a career that is suited for them. So a lot of them decided, I'm going to just go back and maybe try to send a few resumes online on LinkedIn. That's what most people do, taking a risk.
Yeah. And my sense in my work with students from other cultures here in the United States, it's like they're in a double bind that feels like a lot of pressure, and I would say mental health stress. So you're describing what it's like to be, I love that word, airlifted into this system that's working the way it's always worked that you're unfamiliar with. But I also get that there's a lot of pressure from back home, from family, from cultural expectations, and at times even from funders, right? In a lot of countries, the students are funded by their government. And that there's expectations that are sort of pushing them here as well. What do you do when you first sit down with a student and your sense is telling you there's a stress response here that needs to be acknowledged and probably worked with first before we can talk about here's how you do the interview, here's how you search for the job. So what's your approach with someone in that circumstance?
Right. So I think you just touched upon a very interesting point in that there's very different cultural norms, and that really exemplified itself in the education system. For example, people hear very much about problem solving, using the knowledge to apply to situations and solve problems and make money, if you will. Where I grew up, and I think that holds true in a lot of Asian countries, there is a concept to passively acquire the knowledge. The teachers will give you the knowledge, you master these knowledge, you do well in the test, and then when you graduate, depending on how great your grade is or how good your school is, the level of your education, there's a place for you in the education system. Even that's starting to change a bit back home. And I think for them coming to the US, realizing, okay, I'm at Columbia, I'm doing this data science program in the graduate school at Columbia. That doesn't guarantee I have a job. It doesn't even guarantee an interview from anyone. So there is a lot of confusion, a lot of stress, like you said, mental health issue. So this is oftentimes the most challenging bit of my job because you want to explain to them, guys, listen, it is really not because of the sponsorship. People tend to go blame the easiest reason out there. No one wants to sponsor. No, that's not quite true. So my approach oftentimes is I have to help them unsee or unlearn certain things about themselves, about the system. And that's often the first and often the most challenging part of the job is to say, look, just because you went to Columbia using the same example doesn't mean there's a job. You have to really identify who you are. What are your core competencies? What do you want to do, right? You can't just send resumes and apply to jobs, all different kinds of jobs. Find your sweet spot and let's try to build something, whether it's connection or project experience, and try to build your dreams one step at a time.
Yeah, so I think that we have this tendency to oversimplify things, right? Like we say, everyone from Asia is a collectivist cultured person. Everyone from the United States is an individualistic cultured person. And it feels like you're digging into some more nuance there. Could you describe, and maybe you have a specific client in mind, but like when they're presented with this new idea, this new knowledge of this is the way that you have to be and that you have to do this to find work in the United States, how do your clients respond to that?
I think that oftentimes their first initial reaction is in shock. And a lot of that will feel a sense of guilt. My parents spent all that money, sent me here, and they expect that I work in investment banking, and you're telling me I can't, and for various reasons. So I'll give you a not quite specific, but very common kind of example. Because of my own background in finance, I have a lot of students coming to me and say, Heather, I want to get into investment banking. So the first question I often ask is, what specifically in investment banking? Is that alone is a huge field. You could be in mergers and acquisitions, sales and trading. You could be a risk person, a finance person, a compliance technology person. So you name it, there's probably within any investment bank, there's a couple of thousand different type of jobs. And usually people give me that blank look. And at that point, I know they don't really know what they want. So then I ask them to say, okay, do a little research, right? There's a couple of different career paths and tell me what you think is best suited for you, right? Don't worry about how you get in yet. Tell me, identify 2-3 areas that you think are of interest to you. And then they come back and say, okay, I want to be in M&A, using that as an example.
M&A is?
Mergers and acquisitions.
Thank you.
Which is like the crown jewel of most investment banks. And for a investment bank who has probably, say, 200,000 employees, there's probably no more than 5,000-6,000 people in that area. Probably giving a high number. Then you help them analyze, okay, this is the path to get into mergers and acquisition at an investment bank. Usually you have to be someone from a very reputable university, very good grade, well-spoken, demonstrate that leadership ability. You have to be connected with your own alumni network or through family network, whatever that might be. You have to put in a lot of effort in networking. Getting yourself an interview is often a big step, right, before you can even get yourself in front of somebody. So you help them analyze the different path and they start to see what it is about, what they do and how they need to get there. And during this process, a lot of them will realize and say, look, Heather, number one, I'm not interested in this field. I don't think I can ever be doing X, Y, and Z. And then two, I am in graduate school. I probably missed that boat already and it's just not feasible. And then you help them kind of using that funnel approach to figure out what other areas that are best suited for them and how they could find their way into this field.
Yeah. That's so helpful, I think, for listeners to hear, right? Because I think a lot of times, and I'm guilty of this, we talk in broad generalities about the theory and the practice and the techniques, but like you're really drilling down and sort of talking us through how your mind is processing this with the clients that you work with.
That's why we need to work hand in hand on clients.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. So I know that like everyone else, particularly entrepreneurs, the pandemic really sort of shook up your business. And there were many other restrictions restrictions on travel. And of course, the United States became less favorable for people from other countries to come to for school or for work. I'm aware that you've decided to pivot and reach back to China in some pretty interesting ways. So could you talk about, as a person based in New York City, what the work is you've been doing in career development back home in China?
So we got really, really busy at the onset of the pandemic. There's a lot of people panicked and they wanted to stay rather than returning. I would say this time last year, March, April, May, we were just hammered. A great first half of the year. And then when things start to hit the U.S., especially with the policies on immigration and international students, we had a little while where things were very quiet. So I've always wanted to try to do something on social media. I've always wanted to scale my coaching a little bit, and that was a perfect time. And last summer, we started trying a couple of social media platforms where I started recording my interview coaching in short videos. And then we're learning on that front as well. So I started posting some of that. The reaction's been very interesting. There's a couple of platforms that is a complete flop. But there's also a couple that we're getting really positive feedback and reactions. So on one of the social media platform, which is called Red, and it caters a lot to the female, younger female users. And that's very interesting. As I'm exploring the user profile, I've gained over 40,000 followers at this point, and I've formed a community there where people is really interested about career exploration, improving their English communication skills, and just kind of using that to see what's out there, understand my target audience a bit more, and to up my own game.
Yeah, that's exciting.
And it's a lot of work.
And, you know, my like 400 followers pales in comparison.
Except it's all on, where is it on? LinkedIn?
Well, I'm in a few different places, but LinkedIn's probably where I'm the most. So Heather knows that I'm a bit of an old fogey when it comes to the social media thing. I keep trying, but it doesn't fit me as well, obviously, as it fits you.
It's tricky. And then I have to say, like, I tried on YouTube, and that's a sleepy place for me, right?
Yeah.
I mean, every platform has its style, its users, right? So it really takes a lot of work to figure out what people want and hit the stride.
Yeah, I got on Clubhouse for like 2 weeks and haven't been on since, but I remember seeing your name and popping in a room and then realizing that everything that was happening was in Chinese and I probably shouldn't be there. Or I could be there probably, but I wouldn't understand the darn thing that was happening.
I tried it a couple of times. I personally wonder why it's so popular, but I think that it's since cooled off a little bit since April.
That's been my impression too. Yeah, absolutely. So the last thing I want to turn to is and again, like I call people like you people who have positive curiosity, that you have this driven internal sense of curiosity, but you're always applying it, it seems, in service of other people. And so you are a graduate student at Harvard University right now. What is it that you're studying?
So that's another thing that brought to me by the pandemic. I am currently at the Harvard Graduate School of Education in a track called Technology and Innovation in Education. So that was, again, last year. Take a step back. I think we talked about this before when we had a couple of drinks even before last year, that I was thinking, where should I take my career to? There were two choices that I was pondering on. One was taking a certificate in coaching to allow me to better work with clients one-on-one. And the other was going an education track, and that is to scale my effort. And either way worked for me. And I was in that sort of debate. And I'm a mom of two young children. Going to school wasn't quite front and center for me. But last year, around June or late May, early June, I saw out of the unlikely places I was telling you the social media I was working on, the Harvard Graduate School of Education is doing the 2020 to 21 program entirely online. That's the regular degree program. And they're opening up for another round of application for fall. So that's when I decided I am going to give it a try. It feels like a very good opportunity. And you were very kind to write a recommendation letter from me to help me get there. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. It was hard for me to imagine that Harvard wouldn't want you. So what I'm really interested in, I guess this will be the final question, is I know that you're not completely through the program yet. I know that you're winning competitions and things like that from what you've shared. One competition is a win. If you peer into the future, what you're learning in this program focused on technology and innovation, what's going to apply to the field of career development, coaching, and counseling? What is it that you're seeing as you peer into the future based on this learning experience?
So I might need you to help me scaffold this question.
Sure. I'll do my best.
Okay. So maybe we could be a little out of sequence. Can I talk a little bit about what I'm learning here?
Sure, absolutely.
So a little bit about my program. I came in here expecting this is an old school, traditional type of ed school, ed program. And I had no problem with that. I feel like I had a finance background. I'm doing career coaching really from passion, right? And my personal interest. I don't have a lot of theoretical basis. You remember us talking about it, and I'm asking you, what are some of the theoretical basis that I should read up on. So I was really excited to have the opportunity to get some theory under my belt. But it turns out it was very different from what I expected, especially my cohort, the TIE program, Technology, Innovation, and Education. It feels a bit like, and this is my own description, right? It feels a little bit like the business school within the ed school, where they're really encouraging the use of technology, innovation to scale education, and really just wherever you can be creative and innovative. So that has been very different in a positive way for me.
If I remember correctly, it uses a lot of design thinking approaches to solve those particular problems of education through technology implementation up to scale.
Right.
Again, which is very common in many different spaces, but I think it's a very comfortable fit with business as well, business innovation.
So the one thing I feel like really, really hit home for me was when we were working on a class project for a class called Evidence-Inspired Innovation. And one thing that really hit home was fall in love with the problem and not the solution.
Mm.
And I thought, wait, is that something that we were, at least for me, overlooked in the past? We're so quick about, oh, you're here, you want to get into, and I'll again use the investment banking example. So here are five courses you can take on valuation, on modeling, on risk management. But do we forget to ask, why did they choose their career path? What do they know about themselves? Why are they having such a hard time contacting someone, shaking people's hand? So that was a moment I feel like that was very important to say, not jump into conclusions and not design more courses just for the sake of feeding people more knowledge. Is a time to look back and say, can we look at the person in the eye and say, I know who you are, and let me help you be your partner on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
I got lost. I forgot where we are.
So just wrapping up, when you think about scaling career development services, coaching, counseling, what would you predict for the future? When we think about the innovation that we're trying, that will need to happen, when we're thinking about the use of technology and platforms, what would you predict that we're going to see in maybe the next 10 years as we recognize coming out of the pandemic that career development interventions are going to need to be delivered to scale?
I feel like that's above my pay grade, but a couple of things that's happening in learning that I think are very important for someone like me in the field of career counseling is that people are learning everywhere and whenever, right? The online learning is really a big revolutionary factor in all fields of learning. And I think it certainly will be for career counseling as well. And with online learning media, I think that helps enable the technology, right? You can put more contents in the form of media, like what you're doing, right? Your career work is justice work. Putting that in the form of media can help reach more people. And I also think a couple of other things, right? One is I feel like people care about identity more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps because I work with the Asian population and with what's happening in the past couple of months, you really see there's a renewed interest in looking at ourselves, our cultural heritage. Are we doing things that's really fulfilling our own dreams, or are we doing things that's perpetuating that cultural stereotype? So, and then the other thing I feel is informal learning as a way of career counseling could play a bigger role. That's my view. And what I mean is, even in my own practice, right, I do recommend courses to people. More, I recommend people to go out, to network. But now I started to utilize more informal contents. For example, watch this show, right, specifically this episode and this particular plot, and come back and tell me, what do you think of working in this kind of environment? So I think informal learning could be a huge part of what we do.
Yeah, that's so fascinating to me. I've been thinking, you know, when we think about career education and sort of career interventions, I almost think that we need to look at them as campaigns, not events. Right? Like, we're still caught up in this, let me promote this one-time webinar. Let me blast. The event happens. And if you want to pay a fee, then you can listen to the event later. And I think what you're saying is that if we were to think about education intervention as campaigns, right, where we are meeting some sort of goal in the career field, a lot of different places at once that sort of connects to one another. And so maybe I'm on my favorite social media platform, listening to Heather Lulaski spread her knowledge, and the ad that pops up is a career education tidbit, and that can pull me to something else, and that we're creating almost an environment that's rich with information and rich with suggestion or intervention that feels like that aligns with the way that you're thinking about it through your program, especially. It's got to be a more holistic where it's almost everywhere.
So I totally agree. I think what you just said was something I've been reading as of late as well. There's a lot of knowledge, but not that much wisdom, right? The original saying was better than what I said, but I think in an era where people can find YouTube videos, courses, or webinars, everything about how to get into an industry and how to be successful in certain professions, how do you decipher that information, right? And oftentimes I feel the core is to know yourself. It's a journey about self-discovery and how those information and even a career path fits your need. And I think you probably know this much better than I do, right? On-center work, recenter life, that's been a sort of like a guiding principle for me as well, is to say, forget about what daddy, mommy want you to do. Forget about what you think are the cool profession that makes a lot of money. At the end of the day, who are you? What makes you happy? For myself, I feel like that's the same way. I pursue finance because I wanted to do something cool and make money and make my family proud. But as I'm in that area, I realize I didn't give myself enough credit for being a little bit more creative than I thought I was. And I didn't quite want to sit there and sift through numbers and create reports. What I wanted to do is utilize my creativity and my knowledge to do something good.
So. And look at everything that you've done. So it's been such a pleasure to have Heather Lulaski on the podcast. In the show notes, I will put the website for Champ America. I just so appreciate your insight today, and just getting to witness a couple of legs of this journey that you're on has been such a pleasure. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure chatting with you. And I really look forward to seeing you in New York City. And
it's going to happen very soon, this summer. All right. For now, this is Brian Hutchison, Global Career Guy, signing off. Until next time, everyone stay safe out there and be well.